Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Today we talk gardening with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. Good morning.
Good morning.
What a weird season this has been, huh?
You know, it's some things have been just spectacular and other things very disappointing. So it's just, you know, every year's different and this is not one of my favorite gardening years.
Yeah, and it's been, you know, we haven't had a really good rain in a while.
So it's very dry. Yeah. You know, every time we get a rain, I have a little weather station, and we're getting in the hundredths of an inch, not good soaking rains. Yeah. So I hope people are irrigating their gardens, because particularly newly planted material, because it's dry.
Yeah, you can see it. They look like they're like, about a few days ago, I went, yeah, my phlox are looking a little peaked. Yeah, and I gave them a nice drink and they perked right back up.
They perked right back up.
And, you know, that I think that is probably one of my favorite flowers in the garden. Not just, you know, how they look, but they are so, you know, for perennials, they're so easy and they last so long.
As long as you get the disease resistant cultivars, so they don't get covered with powdery mildew.
Sometimes my you know, some years they do.
Yeah.
This year, not so much.
Yeah. This year. Yeah. I have a lot that I had originally planted, and many have gone to seed, and I haven't necessarily edited them out, so I have lots of phlox, which I really need to dig out and get rid of.
I've been saying that.
They look so nice when they're in bloom.
Yeah. It's real. They're one that I find very hard to pull out.
Yes.
Because they're so pretty. 866-999-4626 is our number this morning for your garden questions or stories. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Let's start in the vegetable garden. I have zucchini and summer squash planted next to each other, and cucumbers are all in that same bed. Great on the cucumbers, great on the summer squash, flowers, but not a single zucchini.
Well, I'm very disappointed. Normally at this time of year, I'm giving zucchini away. I grow a great variety called Castata de Romanesco or something along those lines. And it's an Italian heirloom variety that's very nutty, very firm when you cook it. Oh, it's just delicious. And I've had two.
Oh, wow.
You know, the whole summer. Again, lots of flowers. And I have three plants.
Yeah.
And I'm only getting two zucchini.
So are you attributing this to pollinators? Is it just
I have tons of pollinators in my yard. So I'm not sure what it is. Earlier in the season, before I even noticed it, I had a huge influx of cucumber beetles, which not only feed on the foliage and on the stems, they also lay their eggs in the soil about the roots, and the larval stage feeds on the roots. My cucumbers are totally wilted, even though they've been watered. I did get maybe a dozen or so cucumbers over the course of the summer, but that's it. The two zucchini, I've gotten about five zephyr squash, and it's like, you know, what? And they get full sun. There are pollinators. It's just not happening.
Yeah. I planted watermelon in another section of the garden behind the perennial garden, and that sucker has taken off like crazy.
Yes.
Again, not a single. I have a ton of flowers, but no watermelon.
I have one teeny tiny watermelon.
Oh, yeah, and at this point,
the other thing is in tomatoes, last year I probably put up about 50 pints of pureed tomatoes. It's not going to happen this year. Mm. I have wonderful cherry tomatoes, but my slicers were very slow. They're just, I would say, in the past week and a half, 2 weeks, just starting to come in and be ripe, but not in the quantity that I normally have. So I'm just finding, I'm just, what's happening?
Yeah, I'd be curious what people are finding in their tomato garden, because I always put them in the ground, and this year I decided to try an experiment, and I have three big pots, so I have three tomatoes, and they have gone gangbusters.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
I think it's probably the best tomato crop I've ever seen in my garden. Isn't that crazy?
Yes.
You know, and I don't know why, but maybe it's the spot I put them in. You know, I don't know, but they are just doing fantastic. And I've got more tomatoes than I can eat.
Wow, I'm jealous. I have enough tomatoes to eat, but not necessarily enough to put away. And it's like I love to, even though it's when it's a hot, humid day, the last thing you really want to do is do water bath canning and, mm-hmm. and just have boiling water and steam all fill up your kitchen. But I kind of like it. And then all winter I have the taste of my garden tomatoes anytime. I just do puree tomato. It's just with salt, nothing else. So I can use it in anything. And it's not this
year. That's a good idea because, we know what happens once tomato season's gone. It's like, we might as well be eating cardboard.
Yes. I will say my cherry tomatoes are doing exceptionally well. And I grew a couple of different varieties this year that are proving interesting. One is called blueberry. And they start off a very dark purple, a purpley blue. They're very high in anthocyanin, so they're lots of those wonderful antioxidants. And you know they're ripe when the bottom two-thirds turns a beautiful rosy pinkish red. And they have really a nice flavor. I like them. The other one that I haven't decided whether I like the flavor or not, they're called atomic grape. And they're a very large grape tomato. That's purple and green and red all streaked. So in visually,
is it pretty on a plate?
They're gorgeous, and they look gorgeous in a salad. When they're really ripe, the flavor's great. But when they're not quite ripe, not so much. Mm. So that's kind of interesting. Yeah. I did not grow sun gold this year.
Our sun gold. I have sun gold, and I don't even remember what the other two varieties are of the bigger tomatoes that I planted. But yeah, so I thought putting them in pots, they would not do as well. I tried to get big pots so that they had plenty of room, and maybe that's the trick.
And watering.
Yeah, water them every day.
Yeah,
which is. And then I decided to try the rainbow carrots this year.
Oh, yes, I love those.
I do too, but my grandson will only eat the orange ones.
Oh, isn't that
funny? I can
funny?
Maybe convince him to try the yellow, but he will not eat the purple. He will not eat the white.
The yellow and the white are actually very sweet.
Yes.
The purple is not as sweet.
No.
It has
but it's interesting.
In color, it's very interesting. And if you like to roast vegetables, the purple carrot sweetens up when you roast it.
Yeah.
But I love all the different colored carrots. They're great.
They're a lot of fun. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. How are peppers doing?
My peppers, I have one three plants, and one is a jalapeno, one's a bell pepper, and the other is those little lunchback box style. I've had one jalapeno. I've had one green bell pepper, and the lunchbox peppers are just now, mid-August, starting to produce.
Yeah, I put a jalapeno pepper plant in my garden, and I just now am seeing flowers.
Yeah.
I haven't had anything there either.
It's a late season, perhaps because June and the early part of July was actually cool and wet.
Yeah.
And then it got very warm towards the middle and end of July. We had that very hot spell. And with tomatoes and peppers, there's a range of temperature in which pollination occurs. So if it's below, say, a certain temperature or above a certain temperature, the flowers don't pollinate and they fall off. They do not like the really hot, hot, hot temperatures. And they tend to not set as many fruit. They'll continue to produce flowers, and when the temperatures cool off of shade, they like it in the 80s, not up in the upper 90s.
Well, that,
so you're getting them, the flowers pollinated late, so you're getting the peppers late.
Yeah. And that cooler beginning to the season is probably why my sweet peas did so well. And I plant the sweet pea flower in the back.
They're beautiful.
Yeah. And I do it every year, and I don't know why I do it, because most years I'm lucky if I get a couple of flowers, it just dies before anything happens. Yeah. This year, I covered the whole trellis and
all
looked beautiful.
All the cool season vegetables in June, my regular edible peas, shell peas were fabulous, radishes, lettuce, all those early crops were just fantastic. But it's, it's not my tomatoes. I'm disappointed there.
Yeah. And how about basil? My basil looks horrible.
this, I'm glad you brought that up. Downy mildew has reared its ugly head again. I actually planted basil three times because during that cool weather in June, it just failed to thrive. It didn't die, but it failed to thrive. So I kept replanting it. And it looked for a while like I was going to have a good crop of basil, and then the downy mildew hit. And now the upper part of the plants, I can pick good leaves. The rest of the plant does not look that good. However, there was a new variety introduced this year by Proven Winners called Amazel, kind of a weird name, Amazel Basil. It's resistant to downy mildew, and of all the basil in my garden, that looks fabulous. It's become a ginormous plant.
Really?
It's loaded with dark green leaves. Its flavor is perfect. So next year, I may just plant that.
Yeah. Now, mine does not have the downy mildew. It just looks, you know, kind
yellowish.
Of, yeah, just kind of
drying off.
Yeah.
But
everything else around it, the parsley's doing great, the rosemary, the nasturtium, all that other stuff is, you know, my sage looks good.
Yep.
It's just the basil.
The basil. Right.
And let's talk to Lois, who's giving us a call from Marston's Mills. Good morning, Lois.
Good morning. I'm calling not about vegetables right now, but I have a Copertina plant, a nine bark, I guess it's called.
Yes.
And it's been in this place where it's been thriving for about 8 years. And last year it was thriving so much, I cut it back. And when I looked up when to cut it back, it said late winter. So I took it down about halfway. So I took it down to about 4 feet. And now over this summer, it's doubled in size. It looks much bigger than it should be, and it didn't flower as well this year at all, and I think it probably had to do with me cutting it back, and I just don't know how to handle it now, what to do with it to get it in back.
Copertina and Diablo are two very popular cultivars of nine bark, and they are actually very large shrubs. If one thing you have to keep in mind is pruning actually stimulates growth.
Right.
So by only cutting it back to 4 feet, the buds below that are all going to break, and they're going to grow quite rapidly from the point where you pruned it back. I might just next late winter, early spring, take it down to maybe 18 inches, which sounds drastic.
Okay.
But it will put out new growth, and it will be much shorter. But the end result is it's going to be a large plant, regardless of what you do with it.
Yeah, it is okay to be large. It just grew so much this summer, and again, I didn't get the flowers I had before, and I don't know.
Yeah, if you don't prune it at all next year, you'll have lots of flowers. And it will be quite large. I have a Diablo that I've neglected to prune for a number of years, and it's probably, I'm going to say, about 9 feet tall and maybe 12 feet wide. I mean, it really takes up a lot of space.
Yeah.
If I'm on top of things next late winter, I do want to selectively prune out all the oldest stems and then take it down maybe to about 3 feet. And within 2 or 3 years, it will have recovered, but it will be a smaller plant. Eventually, it will be large.
And you will get the flowers back at some point.
At some point, correct.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Yeah. Lois, thanks for the question. 866-999-4626 is our number for your garden questions or stories. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking gardening with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Anne is calling from Wareham. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning. So I had transplanted some chocolate sunflowers about 3 years ago to my yard, and I ended up with the most gorgeous array of chocolate sunflowers ever. This year, all of the leaves are brown. The flowers are coming up, but all of the leaves are completely brown. Any ideas?
Is most sunflowers that I'm familiar with are annual. Are you saying this one's perennial?
Yeah, they're unbelievable. We pulled 12 of them out of a neighbor's yard. She calls them chocolate sunflowers, and they actually do smell like chocolate. They're yellow, but they smell like chocolate. And we put them in the ground, and the first year they doubled, the second year they quadrupled, and just a beautiful sea of green leaves and these beautiful yellow sunflowers.
Mm-hmm.
Just stunning. But this year, the flowers are all ready to open, but all of the leaves are completely brown. It looks awful.
How big are the flowers across?
They grow to about 5 feet tall.
Yeah. And how large are the flowers?
Oh, I'm sorry. The flowers are, but they look like black-eyed Susan size.
Okay, sure. That's probably Heliopsis, which is the false sunflower. It could be they contracted a leaf spot earlier in the season when it was so wet. Anything that was subject to leaf spot certainly could get it this year because it was so wet. The other potential is perhaps because we really haven't had a good soaking rain all of August. It could be a combination of some water stress and perhaps an early season fungus. I'm not sure I'd do anything about it at this point.
Yeah, I'm not going to cut them down because the flowers are just about to come.
Right.
But it just does. It just looks.
It's unattractive. Those are great flowers. What I found with them is the birds like goldfinch absolutely love them once those flowers go by. Yes.
Yeah.
It is absolutely stunning. It's the prettiest thing I've ever done. And
yes.
They just multiply and multiply. Yes, that's what I thought. I kind of thought a fungus and maybe not enough water. So
yeah.
That's what I thought.
Combination of the two. And you know, every year's different, so you live with it this year. Next year, perhaps they'll look spectacular again.
All right. Ann, thanks for the question. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Jane says, I saw pink Queen Anne's lace, usually white, outside a building on Martha's Vineyard. She wants to know what's up with that. Pink.
Well, I have been seeing pictures on the internet of a Queen Anne's lace, which is a pink, and there's some that's kind of purple. So perhaps this is a new variety that's been introduced on the market. There's always a lot of genetic mutation within wild flower populations, and perhaps some enterprising gardener saw it and collected seeds and is now producing a different colored Queen Anne's lace.
It's interesting, in my carrot garden, the purple carrots have been putting up, it looks a lot like Queen Anne's lace.
It is a relative.
Purple, kind of a pinkish, purpley flower. None of the other ones are flowering, just the purple
just the
ones.
Purple.
And it's usually you get that when it's the second year, not the first
correct.
Year. So they're pretty, but I don't know how that impacts my carrots down below.
Yes, probably a lot.
Not in a good way,
right.
All right, let's talk to Brian, who's giving us a call from Katuit. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning. I planted some garlic late this year, not until March, and the plants look healthy, but they never produced scapes. And we pulled one up the other day, and it was kind of stocky. It hadn't produced a bulb.
Yeah.
And I wonder if I should leave them in the ground or if they're shot and I don't have a chance with them or if there's anything that I can do to kind of help them along.
Leave them in the ground as long as possible until the bottom two sets of leaves start turning yellow and then pull them. You probably will not get large garlic. To get good size heads of garlic, they really need to be planted in October. If you want to try it again, get some nice garlic from one of your local garden centers or online and plant it in the middle of the month in October. And it will be harvesting in probably July of next year.
Yeah, so we've done that in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But for this crop, is there... I should just kind of treat it as I have.
Just keep on treating it as you. There's not much you can do. It's because it hasn't had the winter months in which to form a really strong root system. So it got a late start and it will have a late finish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Brian. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you very much.
I say better luck next year, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right.
Okay. Thanks, Brian. Let's talk to Dick, who's calling us from Harwichport. Good morning, Dick.
Morning.
Morning.
Robert, I have a question regarding corn.
I plant a plot every year, and I always get some good corn. Problem is, I've tried everything to keep the borers out of them, from covering with paper bags to using mineral oil to I spinosad regularly. But every year, including this year, I get the, you know, the top inch or so, inch and a half of with the corn borer in it. I wonder if there's any hybrids that are immune.
As far as I know, no. that's the drawback to growing corn. You might shorten the interval. I think spinosad is probably your best bet, but you might shorten the interval between spraying. So maybe every 5 to 7 days, that may give you a better amount of control.
Do you do that before the... even before the silks come out, or while the silks are still green? And,
when you, as soon as you start seeing silks, even the tiniest bit, then you start.
Okay. And what does the moth or the butterfly or whatnot that lays the eggs on them, what does that look like? That's not the white ones.
The white butterfly is the one that lays eggs on cabbage and broccoli. The corn borer moth is sort of a nondescript moth. It's, you know, nothing about it is really flashy. You don't recognize it. If you Google it, you'll probably come up with lots of pictures.
Okay, good. I'll do that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. This has been a great year for the monarch butterflies.
My yard is loaded with monarchs. I mean, every day I'm just in awe of how many are coming through. And I have in my yard what I consider one of their favorite plants, which is swamp milkweed, Asclepias incarnata, I believe is the Latin on it. And it's a lovely garden plant. It's much more attractive in a garden than the wild milkweed with the big pods. It's tall, about 3.5-4 feet tall, has lovely pink flowers, fairly clean foliage. It's so attractive to pollinators. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have bees, I have wasps, I have flies. Anything that pollinates is on it, including the monarchs. And I'm overloaded with them.
Yeah. I talked about this with Mark Faraday when we were doing Bird News, but we actually, my grandson and I, we found one of the little caterpillars mm-hmm. and brought it in the house. And, you know, we were so excited. I was waiting for it to come out of its little cocoon. And, of course, that happened on Saturday when I was, you know, off
away.
Cape away picking up my uncle. Yeah. So, but my grandson got to see it and they got to release it in the yard.
Wonderful.
Yeah. But it's been interesting because I've been looking, and I have the wild milkweed. And as I was looking for the caterpillars, you know, I'm looking for some, you know, munching on the leaves, and just a little bit here and there. It hasn't been a lot. So my guess is something's getting them when they're really small, when they're first hatching.
There are a lot of predators that will take a very small monarch caterpillar. A lot of wasps will provision their egg. They'll sort of paralyze a caterpillar, and when their larvae hatch, they'll have prey to feed on right there. Many wasps are carnivorous.
Yeah.
The thing with the monarchs, if the caterpillars survive to get to a decent size, they've ingested enough of the toxin in the milkweed plant that birds and other predators will not find them tasty, so they're left alone. But it's getting to that stage.
Getting them there, yeah.
So if you want to go to the trouble or enjoy the experience of raising them yourself, it's very easy to do. And I mean, you don't need anything special. Some people like to put them in a terrarium with mm-hmm. a screen top. Other people have just used a cardboard box,
right.
You know, and have fresh, you have to give them fresh foliage.
Yeah, once or twice a day. And clean out the...
Yes, the poops.
Yep.
I mean, it's like if you have a cat or a rabbit or anything like that, it's, you know, animals do poop.
Yep.
Yeah, it's fabulous. I did that last year, and it was just such... I did a little video of it on my phone when it was coming out of the chrysalis, and it hung out for a while, pumping up... It has to pump its wings to get the hemolytic fluid through the veins, and then it flew away. It was just wonderful.
That's so fun. Yeah. And you do something else that's interesting, because, of course, you've got those flowers that are attracting
Correct.
The wasps. You take the flower heads off.
On some of the plants, because one thing about the swamp milkweed, it's very generous in seeding itself and can I've given away a lot of it, and I've actually pulled up a lot of it. And I had one new clump that I decided I didn't want. And so instead of digging it out, I just cut it back. And so its shoots were coming up much later and had no flowers on them. And I noticed that caterpillars were actually surviving on that. There were no pollinators because there were no flowers. So on another one, I simply took off the flowers. And it was the same thing. I had much better success with the caterpillars living. So, you know, I have plenty of plants in my yard for pollinators, so I can afford to sacrifice a few flowers.
Here and there,
yes.
Yeah. Heidi's giving us a call from Vineyard Haven. Good morning, Heidi.
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. I have a question about dahlias. For the past few years, I've been getting dahlia bulbs in through the mail, planting them. But then as they start to get their first buds, I notice that in the crotches of the stem, there's like black, like poop. And then when I would cut open the stem, there was actually something boring into the stem, and it would cause, you know, the flowers even later on just to completely collapse.
Yeah.
And then is there anything that can be done about that? I did a little research about maybe spraying earlier on, but one, it's just such a shame once they get big and then
Yeah, they just
kind of don't recover.
No, once the borer's inside the stem, they don't recover. It's probably a critter called the common stalk borer, and it will it'll attack a number of different flowering plants and eat out the inside of the stem, and basically the stem collapses. The trick to controlling that, the problem is it's not every year. You know, some year it'll attack your dahlias, some years it's on your zinnias, so you never really know. But if you want to protect your dahlias next year against the potential for it coming in, I'd probably start using some spinosad and use it on a regular basis, making sure you're spraying the stems as soon as they start coming up.
Thanks
for the call, Heidi.
Yeah, thanks.
As you know, in years past, I've had many dahlia plants. I just love dahlias, and this past year I stored them a little differently and only one survived. And then I got some, I think five others from somebody else, and you know, they again planted them late. They're just starting to flower now. And you know, digging them up can be a chore.
Yes.
How do you recommend storing them? What's the best way?
Well, you know, everyone has their own particular method. I've grown dahlias for years and years. When I gave up my plot at the community garden last fall, I actually invited everyone to come and take my dahlias, because I literally had hundreds that I was carting into my basement. And I'm looking for ways to garden a little more smartly and reduce the amount of physical labor that I have subjected myself to all through the years. What I always did, and this is not something you'll actually probably read about, but it worked for me. So anecdotally, I had large plastic nursery tubs, because I've planted so many trees and shrubs, and I would dig up the tubers. I would remove absolutely as much dirt as possible simply by shaking them and literally throwing them on the ground. I'd line the pot with newspaper and put my tubers in and separate the varieties by another layer of newspaper, and then top it off with a couple of different layers of newspaper, and store them in my relatively cold basement. It's about 45 to 50 degrees in my basement, which is, you know, I go down there to do laundry in the winter, and that's about it. And I had probably 95 to 100% survival. But you can read, people will say, you know, wash them and remove all the dirt, dry them, store them in peat moss.
And I used to just, I would leave them in the dirt. I would just dig up the chunk. If dirt fell off, fine. And I used to put them in, you know, the plastic Stop and Shop kind of bags that
they
we had.
They get moldy.
No, but they would be, I don't close them tightly.
Okay.
I just close, and same thing, throw them in a big, you know, plastic
big
pot.
Tub.
Yeah. And then last year, because we don't have the bags anymore, I put them in paper bags.
Yeah. No, they
and
dry
that
out.
Was it. They dried out, and they were no good.
Yeah.
Except for one.
Right. Right. That's why I like the big plastic tubs, because at least it keeps, they have ventilation because they're nursery pots. pots, and I'm covering them with newspaper, so there is some air exchange, and there is some soil still in there. I never get rid of all of it, and they've survived beautifully.
Well, I think I'll take these five or six that I have, and I'm trying not to buy any more. We'll see how that works out. I'm thinking I might replace where I put all the dahlias with lilies. Now I have a great variety of lilies as it is, but now that we don't have as big a problem with the red lily leaf beetle,
right,
I'm thinking, you know, lilies, I don't have to dig them up. And they're beautiful.
And, you know, this was a spectacular year. We were talking about how some things aren't doing well in the vegetable garden, but in the perennial border, boy, it was a spectacular year for lilies. My stargazers were they're about 5 years old, and I just had multiple stems with multiple flowers, and the fragrance is just so gorgeous. My Casablancas were beautiful. Mm-hmm. I put in tiger lilies a couple of years ago, and they're finally starting to show off their gorgeous nodding flowers. So spectacular year for lilies. And yes, the lily leaf beetle, it's still around.
Oh, yeah.
But not in the numbers that were so decimating when it first came on the scene in the 90s.
Yeah, and we should mention for folks who don't listen regularly, this is due to a wasp that was introduced into the area.
Little tiny wasp. There was also a little tiny fly that was part of a biological control release coordinated through the University of Rhode Island. I participated in that, and there was some released at the fairgrounds. There was some released in my yard and some released at a third site. And over time, the parasite has been recovered from the larval stage, so it's become established. It's been shown to be established in the population, and it's really reduced the numbers. Mm-hmm. Again, it's not biological control doesn't eliminate, but it lowers damaging numbers.
Yeah. We have a listener who says, "I'd like to save milkweed pods for next year's seeds. Any advice?"
I find I honestly have not had a lot of luck with that. You want to wait till the pods are dry and just beginning to crack. If you wait till they're totally open, all your beautiful little milkweed seeds will fly away. Mm-hmm. You would want to store them someplace where they're going to be cold and dry, or just directly plant them in the fall. Mm-hmm. Try to mimic nature. Yeah. So they probably do have a cold requirement. So your best bet would be probably to plant them in the fall, or if you're storing them, store them in the coldest part of your basement.
I will tell you, I have loads of milkweed now, and it took me a few years to get it to actually take.
Yeah.
But once it takes, boy, look out, right? It's
I love it when those pods begin to crack open and the little wispy things come out. It's just gorgeous.
Yeah, and I also have the butterfly weed, the orange one.
I have that too.
Which, I mean, again, spreads like crazy, but it's so pretty. Who cares? Yeah, spread away.
I planted a new one this year. It hasn't flowered yet. It's Asclepias verticillata. And if you look at it not flowering, it actually looks more like the threadleaf coreopsis. It's got the very, very teeny narrow leaves, and it's supposed to have a white flower. I'm hoping it blooms. Yeah. So we'll see.
866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking gardening with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. If you have comments, questions, stories, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We've been seeing some sort of a scale on the oak trees.
Yes.
What's going on there?
This has been, we had an outbreak this spring, and it continues, of a scale insect, Leucanium scale, on oaks. They are mostly up on the branches. They're sucking insects covered with a thick, waxy coating. They're brown, so you don't notice them, but if you, if a stem or something falls down, you might see all these sort of brown, lumpy things on it. This particular type of scale secretes what we call honeydew. They take in so much plant sap, they literally can't process it all. So some of it is concentrated and excreted as honeydew. Very high in sugars, And very sticky. And I've noticed on the Cape Cod Gardening Facebook site lately, there have been a lot of complaints of people saying, my car is all sticky, there's this stuff coming down, my deck is sticky, I've got all this black stuff growing on top of my hostas, and they'll show pictures. And it's the sticky substance is the honeydew from the Lucanium scale, and it's on most of the oak trees. I've noticed just driving, sometimes my windshield is splattered and it's sticky and it's the honeydew. An interesting side effect of this is there is a particular fungus called sooty mold, and it grows on the honeydew. It likes that real rich, sugary substance. It's not growing on the plant, but it covers the plant with a black, sooty appearance.
Yeah.
So if you see that on whatever is growing underneath your oak trees.
My hollies.
Hollies, hostas, perennials, anything. That's what it is. You can't really treat for the sooty mold.
Right.
It you know, breaks down over time when the honeydew's gone. I wouldn't really recommend treating the oak trees at this time of the year. So,
you know, it's interesting. I don't have it right now on my hollies, but the last few years I've seen it. And it's funny because I, again, didn't know what it was and made the hollies look awful.
Yes.
But they bounce back.
Of
now
course
they look
do.
Fine right now. So they do bounce back. So that's the good news there. This is also a good time to be checking out your local nurseries, because the perennials start to go on sale.
Yes, they do.
Because they look crappy right now, but they'll look great in the spring and summer when you plant them, right?
Yes.
So this is a good time to look for deals.
From now until probably the end of September, many of our wonderful local garden centers will have sales, not only on perennials, but on nursery stock. And now until the end of September is a fabulous time to plant because the soils are warm. Hopefully we'll get into a more regular rainfall. Usually we do in September. There's plenty of time for good root growth, both on perennials and on trees and shrubs. It's a great time to start scouting out those sales at your nurseries.
All right, Sue in Hyannis says, we have a beech plum at our school garden, but no fruit yet after several years, and it's now over 5 feet tall and wide. Any intel?
Beech plum are notorious for not producing fruit. And if there are no other beech plums around, then there's no cross-pollination. I don't know if it's strictly necessary for beech plum, but it helps if there's other plants. If when they're in bloom, it's a rainy time, the pollinators don't visit it. So it's when I was working with the Extension Service, was a common question we got. And if it was a rainy spring, a lot of people never got beech plums. Mm. And this was a rainy spring. Yeah. So I think it's probably lack of pollination. Don't give up.
Yeah.
Don't give up hope.
Yeah.
Maybe plant
year.
A second
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
And if it's a nice, dry, sunny May, which is when they bloom, then you should have some beech plums.
All right. Let's talk about mosquitoes for a minute here. You know, we've got a lot of concern with the you know, finding triple E in some of the mosquitoes. Aside from the spraying, let's talk about some of the things we can do in our yard to discourage those mosquitoes.
The first thing is, you know, just on a day when it's not 90 degrees and blazing sun, go out and just do a good scouting of your yard. Perhaps there are maybe there's a 5-gallon bucket that you have over by your garden shed that you have inadvertently left upright and it's collected some water, or a wheelbarrow, or pots, nursery pots, you know, that you haven't been using. And you really need to do this on a regular basis. Even the smallest amount of standing water will support mosquito populations. So one step is simply going around and making sure there's no standing water. If you have bird baths, be sure you're emptying them every couple of days and refilling them. Don't allow them to stay there for weeks at a time. You can also, if you have ponds that aren't really rapidly moving water, you can purchase a material called mosquito dunks. And it's a form of BT, Bacillus thuringiensis, that will kill mosquito larvae, and you can put a dunk in a pond or a body of water, and it will manage the mosquito population by killing the mosquito larvae.
Does it kill anything else?
No, it doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Just the mosquitoes.
Just the mosquitoes. This particular strain of BT. Yeah. There's another strain of BT that's used for caterpillars. There's a strain of BT that's used for Colorado potato beetles. They're very specific. That's the thing about biological control. It's very specific as to its host for the most part. So prevention of a buildup of population in your yard is certainly one thing. Protect yourself. Use, you know, mosquito repellent on your clothing when you're outside. Burn citronella candles if you're sitting out on your deck in the evening. Just sort of common sense things.
Right.
Don't go out, you know, at dusk and dawn.
Right. And I know a lot of people, you know, they get very nervous when you hear about Triple E or even like, you know, with the ticks and Lyme disease.
Correct.
And so we've got this, you know, burgeoning business of spraying yards.
Correct.
But so what we want to do there, if we decide that's a route we want to go, you really want to talk to them about what they're using.
Correct.
And when they're spraying, because it not only kills mosquitoes and ticks, but pollinators.
It could
and
be, depending on what they're
what
using.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. And also depending on where they're spraying, if you have like an undergrowth, a brushy undergrowth in your yard that, you know, you're not actively gardening, it's just sort of a wild area, stays moist after rain or inadvertently is irrigated when you irrigate your gardens, those would be the types of areas that mosquitoes would seek shelter in. So certainly that would be an area you might consider spraying, as do some people like to treat their whole yard. I frankly don't know that that's necessary.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So I'm looking around my garden and already seeing all the fall projects that I have coming up. You know, as
yes.
Yes. And one of them is dividing the hostas.
Oh, I say I'm going to do that every year.
I know, me too. But I'm really going to do it this year. I have some just really beautiful hostas, and I'm going to do some rearranging.
Yes, I say I'm going to do that as well.
Yeah.
I have one bed along the side of my driveway, and it has, in one area, it has just this fantastic hosta called Dark Shadows. Do you remember that soap opera back in the 60s?
Absolutely.
Me too. I'm dating myself. It has dark shadows, it has stained glass, it has cathedral windows, and they've all gotten quite large, and it's a beautiful display, but they can be divided, and I think I would like to do that either this fall or next spring. I have another area of my large shade garden in the front. I took out a shrub that spread by underground stems, a sorbaria. Beautiful in bloom, pollinators love it, but it ended up taking over about 100 square feet of ground. So I took that out, and I pull out all the roots, and anytime anything pops up, I pull it out. And I'm turning that into a hosta garden. So by dividing a number of the hosta that I have, I can easily fill that up without spending any money.
Yeah, it's amazing how you divide that hosta into four, and right there, four plants
absolutely
out of one. Sarah Beth is calling from Mashpee. Good morning. Do I have Sarah Beth from Mashpee? Good morning.
Good morning.
Yep, go ahead.
Oh, I had a question about tomato blight. We have tomatoes that look terrible, some that are doing very well. But my question is about next year.
Mm-hmm.
We have them in big pots. Always.
Yes.
Do I have to get rid of all of the soil?
It's a good idea to use fresh soil every year. And by soil, I'm talking about potting soil. Regular garden dirt gets a little too compacted in a pot. So I would use something like the Espoma or Costa Maine potting soil, which works very well in large containers for tomatoes. But yes, I would start with fresh soil. I'll be honest with you, my tomatoes really don't look very good this year.
Mm-hmm.
I have some early blight. I didn't get out there with my fungicide early enough in the summer and waited until they were already infected before I sprayed. and they really don't look good at all.
Yeah. On the other hand, mine in pots look great. Yeah.
Yeah, we have some that are beautiful and some that are terrible. Yeah.
My cherry tomatoes look good.
Yeah. Yeah. Sarah, Sarah Beth, good luck with that. Thanks for calling.
Thank you so much.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Nan from Brewster says, love the garden show. Have a lot of hydrangeas to transplant, including some lace caps that are not blooming very well where they are. Should I wait for spring or move in the fall?
I think they move. You could move them, you know, early in September, and if you keep them well watered, they should be okay. I prefer actually to move them in spring, early April. I think they just, that way you, they don't go through a winter with a smaller than normal root system. They're so tricky. It's a beautiful year for hydrangea, by the way. I mean, spectacular year in bloom.
For my lace cap, but not my others.
Yeah. Well, all of mine, there's one called, you know, even my big mop heads did well this year.
Yeah, those did well.
Yeah. And the white paniculatas, of course, look fabulous every year. But you can move them. Earlier is better. So, you know, within the next couple of weeks, early September, and keep them well watered if you want to do it in the fall. Otherwise, wait till April.
All right. I'm not sure if we're going to be able to do this without a picture, but Eileen says, my home in Chatham has a 4-foot by 2-foot section of a plant that comes back every year, and it's so unusual in appearance. It has leaves that are dark green, some purple coloring, and a bumpy surface like a type of lettuce or spinach. Given my unsure identification of what it really is, and since it grows amongst the grass, it gets mowed. I'm sorry I don't have a photo.
I bet it's a juga.
That's what she said. Is it a juga? Yeah, and what is that?
I bet it's a juga.
Yeah. She wants to know what is a juga.
It's a ground cover. A ground cover that has, if you don't mow it, it will send up most likely blue flower stalks, sometimes pink. There are pink varieties. I have it in my lawn, and I just mow it, and it looks kind of interesting.
And she has a second question. She says, can I successfully move a stargazer lily? Their stems are as strong as a thin tree trunk. They are the tallest flower amongst the surrounding flowers. I gave it a tug to get an idea of how hard it would be to unearth. Won't be easy. Yeah, just take a shovel.
Dig deep.
Yeah.
You want to make sure you get the entire bulb, so dig deep.
Yeah. It's funny. I had a crepe myrtle that, you know, every year a little more died back, and it looked pretty much dead. There was just a couple little things, and I pulled that whole thing out. And don't you know, I have, you know, a little bit, like about 6 inches growing back there. You know, I thought I got rid of it, but no. And it's like, it's a hard one to pull off.
The will
off.
To survive,
yeah, like, I'm
yes.
going to survive. But that's kind of a, we're sort of borderline.
Very borderline.
Yeah.
I had two, and both of them have been killed, and I've since gotten rid of them.
Yeah.
You know, I love them, but, you know, I look at things and say, I've loved you, and now, you know, you just have to go.
And that's something we don't often think of with perennials, but everything has a lifespan.
That's right.
So, you know, if you've gotten a few good years out of something and it's gone, you
just... Be grateful.
Yeah. That's my cherry tree. That's the other thing I need to pull out. And I'm going to do that after everything's done blooming, because I'd like to stump it too, and I don't want to ruin all the hosta underneath it at the moment.
Yep.
And as you know, trying to figure something else out to put in its place, because the cherry trees generally, what, they're
15
not
years
yeah,
is,
at the
is
most.
The max you're going to get out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it will live longer than that, but it won't really look the way you would like it to.
Yeah. And then just in the last minute or so that we have, can we plant anything right now?
Oh, sure. In the vegetable garden, you can plant beets, carrots, green beans for fall, escarole, more lettuce. So lots of things you can put in the garden right now. I may try beets one more time if the bunnies will allow me to get some. Perennials can go in now. You know, pretty much we still got a good 6 to 8 weeks of a planting season.
Right. We just want to make sure anything we put in now gets watered
regularly.
Water. Yes,
yeah.
Because we don't want
that
to dry
the,
out.
Yes.
All right. Roberta Clark joins us the third Tuesday of the month.
Correct.
To think about that for a minute. Next month, we'll wrap up the gardening season.
We will.
I hate when that happens, but it is upon us. Thanks for being here. We'll see you
My
next
pleasure.
Month. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.